From the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina, this is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, presented by A Cloud Guru, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. This is, if you listened to last week's show, this is part two of the Cloudcast that we did with the MetLife Digital Accelerator program that was powered by Techstars here in Cary, North Carolina, working with MetLife, working with Techstars, really getting a behind-the-scenes look at some of the companies that are part of this Techstars program, this three-month program that is really looking at companies that are trying to disrupt the insurance industry and lots of different aspects of the insurance industry, personal insurance, business insurance, Medicare, Medicaid, all sorts of different things. And last week, we had a chance to interview three different companies. This week, we're going to talk to three new companies. We hope you enjoyed the format. Ran a little bit longer than usual, but really got a chance to dig into some of these companies and the founders and really kind of understand the Techstars process, understand the mentoring process, understand how they help companies execute on their early vision or their expanding vision, and then how they move along and try and look at new rounds of funding. So today we're going to introduce you to three new companies. We're going to introduce you to Fix Health. We're going to introduce you to Portable. And we're also going to introduce you to Safely. And these three companies, again, like we had last week, really look at three different aspects of the insurance industry. And I think what you're going to find is, in a lot of cases, these are things that are very applicable to your life and may be interesting to you either to follow the company or potentially get involved with these products as they grow and mature. So with that, we're going to go ahead and get started with Fix Health. We're going to talk to Mike Tinney, who is the founder and CEO. They are a company that has been evolving over time, and we'll get to know Fix Health. All right, folks, we are back here in the MetLife building here in Raleigh. We've been spending the day with both the folks from MetLife, from Techstars, and focusing a lot on some really interesting companies, some interesting entrepreneurs, people that are very focused not just on the insurance aspect, which obviously MetLife has, everybody knows them from, but really looking at, how do we make people's lives better? How do we make their wellness better? Make it interesting so that people want to improve their lives and take an ownership in it. So very excited to have a company that's really not only starting to do this more and more, but has been doing it for quite a while. So very excited to have founder of Fix Health, Mike Tinney. Mike, welcome.
Hey, hi. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. We love finding, we talk a lot to companies out of Silicon Valley, but we love finding companies that aren't. You guys are based in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Give us a little background because you're a little bit unique in this in that you guys have been in business for a little while and you're going through some transformations of growth and so forth.
We are. Yeah. We're kind of the teenager in the program. We have had a product in the corporate wellness space now for about 3 years. We launched the new updated version of it last year, so it's still relatively young in its current format. But we joined the program with an interest to accelerate our business growth. Techstars takes companies in up to, I would say, mid-size. Mm-hmm. And so they were pretty assuring of us that we weren't too far along to probably benefit. And we were looking to diversify. So yeah. we're here to take what we've learned and gotten good at in the corporate health space.
Yep.
And see if we can apply those methodologies to other problem areas.
Right. And the thing that's sort of unique about you guys, and we'll get into this in more detail, but there's some folks here who are, they're building an app, they're interacting with insurance providers. You guys are at your core, you're a gaming company.
We are game nerds.
Yeah, yeah. You guys have gaming technology. You made it very clear to me. You're not a gamification system. You are a game that is enacting, healthful, wellful type of things. Tell folks how you connect those dots between, the gaming technology and what you're trying to help people with.
Sure. So games, whether you realize it or not, are one of the most effective behavior change mechanisms mankind has ever invented.
Yeah.
If you ever played hide and go seek as a kid, you're talking and using now for entertainment what hunter-gatherer societies use to teach their children how to not be eaten by predators and how to hunt squirrels and rabbits and yep. find those things that are hard to find in the forest. You can look at almost any game throughout history and find some sort of learning or societal application that it served. And a lot of people don't realize that about games. Games have a little bit of a reputation for being trivial or purely entertainment. They are incredibly entertaining,
yep.
and more addictive than alcohol. But we've taken the methodology of game-based entertainment and applied it to helping people reprioritize their health activity decisions.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think one of the things that was interesting we were talking before this was, you know, we were talking about corporate wellness and all of us have, at some point if you've worked for a larger company, they've rolled out a program. They said, hey, you should do this. It'll make you healthier. It'll reduce your insurance and so forth. But then you're learning more and more that that's sort of a generic behavior or a general population behavior. There are, you know, unique behaviors throughout your life cycle that this may become applicable to as well. Is that, are you guys starting to understand that, you know, maybe, you know, how you deal with an injury is part of that, how you deal with, going through a childbirth or something, you know, recovering from, there's different aspects of that. Is that an interesting aspect to, say, MetLife in terms of thinking about how this could be applied to things?
Yeah, I think so. So At our core, we are an incremental behavior change engine.
Yeah.
So our corporate health challenges run for 6 weeks long. And over the course of those 6 weeks, we'll take about 92% of the participants up from 3,000 steps a day and 30 minutes of exercise a week to 8,000 to 10,000 steps a day and 120 to 150 exercise or active minutes a week. And to give you some perspective, societally, the U.S. Department of Health recommends 150 active minutes a week for Americans to maintain a healthy lifestyle. And by most standards of reporting, it's believed that about 5% of Americans achieve that.
Wow.
So if you look at how much is spent on the health and fitness and well-being industry, it's somewhere in the I want to say it's about twice the size of the video game industry.
Okay.
But it's a huge spend that we have trying to look like the people on TV, and we just abysmally fail because it's not a problem you can buy your way out of. It's a situation you have to behave your way through.
Right.
And we've had a lot of success taking the daily pain of prioritizing these physical things that people just generally put at the bottom of their list and helping them move it up more into their entertainment gratification category.
Yeah.
And so to get to your question, when you think about at our core, we have an engine that delivers motivations and prompts and an entertaining feedback loop for when you accomplish those things that make the journey towards physical activity an easier one for people because it's more gratifying along the way.
Yeah.
That type of methodology can be applied to a lot of different areas.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, an insurance company profits when people are healthy
yeah.
or when they return to health faster.
Yeah.
And we believe pretty strongly, well, we know that we were invited into the program because our corporate health program has a 92.4% completion rate, which
yeah.
is about twice the industry's previous high watermark. And we're excited to apply those standards and methodologies to some of the insured challenges that MetLife's customers have.
Right, right. Yeah, no, it's always interesting when people can take – I mean you mentioned early on, you know, games sort of come from sort of fundamental cultural things that we do. You know, when you can motivate somebody, you can get them energized, you can apply that to a lot of parts of your life, whether it's work or a hobby or whatever it is. Walk us through sort of what the experience is, because I think people think, well, there's work, and then, you know, games is, you know, something I do for fun. Like, help me connect the dots of how that game becomes part of what I do in my work experience or my health experience.
Sure. So, you know, I think a lot of people listening to this have probably gone through some sort of, if they're at a company of a certain size, say 100 or more employees,
right.
most companies that size have done some sort of wellness campaign. They've reached reached a conclusion or had an epiphany where, hey, if we invest a little bit of energy and money into our staff's physical and emotional well-being, there's a chance, regardless of how difficult it is to measure, and that's a whole different topic, but you know, most companies change insurers every couple of years, and so you never really have legacy health data. But you know, most good companies understand that if I put a little bit into the well-being of my staff, they're going to be happier, they'll be sick less often, they'll be more alert when they're at work, and over the long run, you know, maybe they can offset some of the chronic debilitating disease conditions that Americans are increasingly behaving their way into.
Right.
So, you know, a company makes that decision and then they go looking for a solution. And some companies will take what I would just say is the easy route. You've got insurer X, Y, or Z. I don't want to name any because we work with a lot of them. But most insurers have some sort of basic wellness platform where you have a website, it counts your steps. Maybe, you know, after 20,000 steps, you're rewarded with a picture of Paris, France, and the Eiffel Tower. And there congratulations, you've walked to Paris. We decided a long time ago not to be in the walking challenge business because we thought it was boring. And we had a big argument about why it was boring and how what would need to change. And out of that argument came the idea for our challenge.
Yeah.
So it gets rolled out to employees. The company makes an announcement. And it feels like you've got a movie day coming up. There are posters that go up. The emails have a very consumer video game or movie release feel. And you're invited to join your coworkers and form up into teams to see if you can survive a zombie outbreak.
Yeah.
The outbreak runs for 6 weeks long, and you're on a team with 3 to 9 of your coworkers, and you're all working together to collect steps every day to stay ahead of this advancing zombie horde. And blocking your path to the safe house each week are obstacles, usually packs of zombies you have to get around or through. And so you need your steps to get to the safe house. You need exercise minutes to get through the obstacles. Under the hood is a prescription of an increasing level of difficulty. So if you've ever played a video game, you know that the first level is easy.
Right.
The third level is a little challenging, and the ninth level – can I curse on this?
Sure.
The ninth level, it'll piss you off.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you'll get blocked. If you play Candy Crush Saga, you know that every once in a while there's this awful level that just bothers the crap out of you.
Right.
So when you said people have fun, I'll push back on that a little bit and say great games don't have to be fun, but they do need to be rewarding.
Yes.
You can challenge and bother people in a game, and you can annoy them, and there's a part of the human psyche that just digs in on that if you think you're still making headway.
Yeah.
You got to give them the payoff, but as long as you do that, they will love your game.
Yeah. So if I'm interpreting that right, there are certain basic human emotional things that we don't necessarily even know exist under the surface, or maybe we do know them. This means you don't have to go after a company who identifies themselves as like, we hire people who love to play games. It's like, this will fit for everybody.
Some of our best success stories come from you know, folks in their 50s in kind of more of the senior levels of their career that have you know, fallen out of sync with maybe some of the habits that they had when they were younger.
Yeah.
And this becomes an access point for them to reprioritize their day. And it's incremental. And we use all of our dirty tricks. The stuff I used to do to keep kids glued to the couch in front of their Xbox, we now get to do.
Yeah.
To get people up and moving and get them healthy.
Yeah. How do you, when your numbers are that good, so 92% is a significant number, especially when, you know, I think you told me like the average is like 56%. How do you convince a potential customer that you're that much better than everybody else? Is there skepticism, or is there just a simple way to show it to them?
So we're very transparent with our data. Yeah. We're one of the only companies that is. Mm-hmm. And we'll show our historical data up front. But we decided early this year that the easiest way to do that is to just guarantee.
Yeah.
So we're the only company in the space that guarantees that 80% of the employees that start the program will finish it. And we haven't had to cash in on that yet.
Yeah.
We've averaged 92.4, so that's a pretty safe bet for us. and we were really confident in right. those numbers. But it's the easiest way for us to remove the speculation from an employer is to essentially just say, we'll take the guesswork out.
Yeah.
We'll guarantee that 80% of your employees will stay in the program and complete it.
Right. And after the 6 months – or I'm sorry, the 6 weeks is done, is – do they tend to go, we want another challenge, we want another game?
Yeah, so we have we launched our app, our updated app version of the challenge in the summer of last year, and we're just now on our three-peat cohort mm-hmm. of clients. And so we have a single-serving pricing model where some clients will just kind of pay as they go and do challenges on a one-off basis, and then we've introduced a subscription model, like think of us as like the Netflix for yeah. health challenges, where cool. you pay a monthly rate based upon your company size, and your employees have access to a website where they can just spin up challenges and invite each other into them and do as many as they want. And then every quarter we come in and we organize some big company-wide, more traditional walking challenge.
Right, right.
But we have different adventures in the outbreak. You can go on a supply run. You can go on rescue missions. You can do scouting runs and yeah. And things like that.
Very, very cool. So I'm going to wrap it up with one last question. You guys have been Fix has been in the market for a while. You guys have been successful. Like you said, you're going through a pivot. What does Techstars bring to you that maybe you weren't able to do by yourself? A year ago or something like that.
Yeah. So I'd clarify. We're here to diversify, not pivot.
Like, yeah.
We're happy with our wellness business. Obviously, we always think it could be bigger, but sure. we have a comfortable little engine that works
right.
and provides for us. But we were looking to disrupt ourselves and disrupt our thinking and really accelerate our ability to spin up a new product line.
Okay.
And rather than taking a year or two, we believed that 3 months in Techstars would give us a year's worth of velocity.
Okay.
And 5 weeks in, I feel like that was a correct statement
good,
so far.
Good choice. Excellent. Excellent. Well, Mike Tinney, thank you for being on.
Thanks for having me.
Very, very cool to see really a different way of thinking about this. And I think, the thing that's been interesting is, gaming is becoming a part of everybody's life. We're seeing, major changes in iPhones just because of, gaming being a popular platform. So great to see it not only becoming part of what we do in our corporate life, but being really successful in our corporate life. So excellent. Best of luck to you.
Thanks.
Folks, we'll follow up, but thank you for the time.
And I appreciate you having me.
You bet. Thank you. Okay. That was Mike Tinney with Fix Health. And for our next guest, we're going to introduce you to a company called Portable. Portable is a company that's based out of London, England. They have two guests on this segment, both Mike Minette and Allie Lanning, who are the co-founders. Portable looks at life insurance and insurance benefits for freelancers in the gig economy. So let's get to know both Mike and Allie from Portable. And we are back. We are back here at Techstars here in MetLife in Raleigh, North Carolina. So very excited to have a chance to talk to both Mike Minette and Allie Lanning, the sort of the founding team of Portable. You folks are trying to help insure and help keep safe freelancers. So sort of insurance for freelancers, folks that, is becoming more and more of a growing population of workers. And obviously those folks maybe working for different people, but want to make sure that from job to job to job, they're insured. So welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about how this partnership got started and a little bit of your backgrounds before we talk about Portable.
Yeah, great. I mean, there was just something you said there in the introduction, which triggered my mind as where this whole thing came from. Mm-hmm. And it's probably a good place to start. And it was around, there is this macro shift going on, if you like, from the world of full-time employment into the world of the free, we call it, which picks up everything from the gig-based Uber driver down one end of the spectrum all the way through to the baby boomer silver surfer 2 to 3 day a week consulting at the other end.
Right.
And this is a huge global phenomenon and a macro market shift to the point where 60% of the workforce is going to be sitting on that side of the fence as opposed to the traditional full-time employment model,
right,
employer and employee. And that's kind of what got us started on this because we are both have been long-term consultants, contractors, independence, and sensing that there is this shift going on. And when you go from full-time employment to being out by yourself, you've got none of these sort of layers of protection or security in place.
Right.
So you're running huge risks because if something goes wrong, right, it falls apart pretty quickly.
Well, and it's time-consuming. You want to be focused on things that make money, and they want to focus on, you know, other things. Yeah.
And fundamentally, I think we've got a global mission, if you like, which is just to help freelancers to live well. But sitting underneath that, we're looking to do time, money, and stress.
Yeah.
So you're right. Research is showing us that these people are managing now between 7 to 12 relationships just to try and keep their little independent business of one afloat, mm-hmm, which is taking them away from the sort of the fun part and the value creation work, which is what they kind of aspired to in the first instance.
Right, right. Ali, fill us in on your kind of role in making this successful, but making it appealing to people, your background in having worked in this space for a while.
Sure. So I'm a freelancer as well, as Mike said. Been that way for probably about 5 years now, so kind of familiar with the pain points. And actually, our whole team is made up of contractors and freelancers.
Okay.
So we've kind of been there and done it. So we'd like to say that Portable is for freelancers by freelancers. And my background is in user experience and product development primarily, and also a bit of proposition development.
Right.
So I guess what I'm trying to do and our vision really is to have a portable experience, so that rather than having to deal with, you know, your insurance providers for X number of products, that you just come to us, become a portable member,
right,
and we just deal with the whole thing for you. And that you also can then lean on that network of people around you who, like us, know your pain points,
right,
know what you need, can help and support each other.
Okay. Obviously, folks are probably picking up with the accents. It's a little different than a lot of times we're talking to folks in the States. Being from the UK, being from outside of the States, how much of what your focus is on kind of global products, or are you focused mostly on the UK, on Europe, and kind of that focus area?
Yeah, look, it's a great point. I mean, from Australia originally, but long-term now living in London, and we set up our base camp in London. It's the market we know, and our network's strong there. We always had a global ambition. I mean, most entrepreneurs do.
Sure.
But there's method to our madness, because at the end of the day, there's also this global village, digital nomad movement going on now.
Right.
Which is this portability aspect that we're trying to tap into. So we might have someone who lives by day in London, but they've taken a 3-month contract over in Europe or across in the States.
Right.
Someone who lives in the States and has got a contract up in Canada or Mexico. So we see this global trend and global movement of work by individuals, networked in remote teams, and that's the sort of the space that we're trying to play in. So we need to be global in our thinking, mm-hmm, and then the sort of the support will be at the local level, which is why it's been brilliant to sort of have access not only to Techstars, which kind of thinks and rolls that way,
right,
naturally anyway now, the global village, but also MetLife. You know, they're a global insurer, brilliant partner. It just so happens that our first test market, if you like, is this brilliant opportunity now coming out of Cary, North Carolina,
right,
into the US. We've been doing the research. The trends hold across the pond,
yeah,
which we're just validating that. And away we go.
Yeah. No, that's great. I know, you know, just a little bit that we even do with the podcast, we contract out certain things. We've got people who help us do logos and designs and music and other things like that. So it's something that everybody needs. You don't always think about the kind of the results of the people on the other side of it all the time. Alec, help me a little bit. You made a mention you want to be, essentially you want people to have a portable experience. Mm-hmm. Obviously, freelancers, like you said, could be working with a lot of different companies and their things change. How do they think about it? So, like, if I were to change jobs, but I go to another large company, mm-hmm, I may or may not deal with the same insurer if it just coincidentally. How do people have a sense through the portable experience? Maybe will they keep the same doctors? Or what's the thinking behind, you know, how do you keep things great for freelancers, but then what's their experience on the medical side or health side?
Yeah, so that's interesting you talk about the medical and health side, because that's a huge learning curve for us, mm-hmm, because operating up until now out of the UK, It's just a completely different issue, completely different pain points. So we're kind of on a learning curve when it comes to health. Mm-hmm. We're trying to validate whether that's a good thing that we can provide, or mm-hmm. whether that's just, you know, too complex at the moment for us to go there as a go-to-market strategy. So that one is particularly up in the air at the moment. But I guess overall, insurance is kind of the bit that no one really wants to think about too much. You just need the peace of mind and reassurance that it's there, that you're covered, that you've got the right stuff in place. Right. So that initial sort of contract between Portable and its members is really the place where the insurance part happens, and then it's stuck to the back of the bus.
Gotcha.
And the engagement moving forward is you're now part of this group of people who know what you know, who experience what you're experiencing on a daily basis when it comes to finding a new gig and finding work and getting recommendations and all the kind of unique experiences of being a freelancer.
Right.
So we're getting all these stories coming in from people about, you know, what it feels like to be a freelancer that goes into a corporate environment and being the only contractor on the floor, you know, and all the kind of experiences that come with that and how you handle that. So I think on a kind of daily or weekly engagement level, that's the bit that will be at the front.
Gotcha. But, it makes sense. It's you want them to have an experience and then not think about it, right? You know, you don't necessarily want them to go, well, I forget the name of that portable, whatever the company was, but what happens behind the scenes in terms of making sure that they're covered or who you work with, like you kind of want them to forget about that.
Absolutely. We just want them to put one check in the box. You know, I've dealt with insurance, but now I'm part of this community and I can start leaning on them for whatever I need going forward.
Yeah. Interesting aspect. I think a lot of times people think of Techstars as it's a bunch of young kids. This is their first, you know, they had an idea. This is their initial thing. My question is around, you are sort of serial entrepreneurs. You've started companies, you've sold companies. What's the motivation? You know, like, help me walk through for somebody who's done this before, what drew you to Techstars as opposed to saying, like, I've done this before, that type of mindset?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I actually get asked that a lot. What could you get out of it? And I would encourage anyone who's at any stage of their life journey, who's got a business idea or a startup concept, to put it through if you can, because it's not easy to get in any of the great accelerator programs, because it does so much for you so fast. And we took the same view. The Techstars opportunity came to us. We actually had only 2 days to get our application in. It also required a big commitment to be based here in the States for the full 3 months.
Right.
So we had to make that decision very, very quickly. But to me, it was a no-brainer, including the investment angle, you know, the equity position they take in the business. Because kind of their whole methodology is you will cram 18 months worth of work into the 3 months that you are here.
Right.
So critical to early stage success is just, you know, getting through as much work as possible to get yourself going. So that alone has been invaluable, and I wouldn't think twice about doing it again.
Yeah.
Even as a serial entrepreneur, the disciplines you learn, the exposure, you know, experiential learning that we all gather, the contemporary thinking, and then just the access back to the whole Techstars network.
Right.
Not just for the program, but for life after the program.
Exactly.
It's brilliant.
And it might be even more apparent to us, having sort of been around the block a few times before, that, you know, we've worked inside big corporations, you know, big enterprise level organizations. And so we kind of really clearly know that things move slow on the inside.
Yeah.
And so I think we really appreciate the acceleration part of being in an accelerator. You know, the value straight away from being able to get meetings going, you know, instantly rather than waiting for gaps in diaries to, you know, come up in 3 months' time.
Yeah.
I think we really appreciate that. And we're sort of coming from a place of experience.
Yeah, and people can't see this because obviously we're audio, but Mike's daughter is here with us. She's sort of off camera, off microphone. But to me, that's something that I know a lot of folks that I work with, people that are in our network, have said, like, man, I would love, there's an opportunity to go. I'd love to go do that thing, but I don't want to pick up my family and move, or that's too disruptive. Like, you're working through some of that.
Yes, again, big decisions. Especially being, you know, outside of the country, but it's actually no different. West Coast commitment to East Coast. I think everyone has made a commitment to be here. We just at the end of the day, we just had to make it work
sure.
as a family.
Yeah.
Mike has a phrase, family first. Which, you know, we all have, everyone in our team has different sort of family commitments. And, you know, we're, like you say, we're not sort of 21 years old and, you know, able to just like live in mum and dad's garage. That's just not going to happen for us. So my 8-year-old was out here a couple of weeks ago.
Great.
So she's come out and experienced the whole thing. And Mike, the rest of Mike's family arrives this weekend, I think. So it's a... It's a portable family experience, but
it's just experiential kind of learning on so many levels.
Yeah, no,
personal, professional, and if it doesn't mash together nicely anyway, it actually will just cause you problems down the track,
right?
Because these are life issues,
right?
And they'll be at the expense of one or the other. So jump in.
Yeah, let me ask you one last question. Obviously, freelancers, like you mentioned, it's going to be 60% of the population at some point in time, but that also means it's a really distributed set of communities of people. How do you begin to say, how do we get in front of these people? How do we make sure they're aware of what we do? What's the initial thought process?
Well, it's pretty strong, actually. We just talk about, so they're a very interesting dynamic, and you're right, they are by default groups of networks. They network together as individuals to make stuff happen, be it professionally or personally. And we talk about going fishing where the fish are. And actually, the freelancing community, the gig community, the baby, you know, they all kind of move around in tribes. They are networked powerfully together. They feed each other. And that's both offline and online.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got some pretty strong lines of sight as to where we're going. You know, after our first line of sight is around 1099 IT contractors, specialists, you know, and again, quite specific, a target cohort. We know where they hang out and live online because we are them.
You're part of them.
And we've got the empathy. And, you know, back to your point, 60% of the workforce, but it's growing 4% year on year. So that's where the activity is, poorly served by the incumbents. And fundamentally, coming right back to my opening line, we just want to help them live well.
Yeah.
And that's our mission.
Yeah, that's excellent. We say over and over again the companies that we always find are most successful or that sort of have the best strength and growth are the ones that basically live their product. It was the product that they, you know, would have built if they had to, or they built it because they needed it. And so very exciting stuff.
Yes.
Mike Minette, Allie Lanning, founding team of Portable. Thanks for being on. And
thanks for having us.
Best of luck with growing the business. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Enjoyed. Thank you.
You bet. That was Mike Minette and Allie Lanning from Portable. The final company that we're going to talk about today, introduce you to today, is Safely. Safely is another company that's based out of Atlanta, Georgia, just like Fix. And we're going to talk to Andrew Bate, who is one of the co-founders, along with Lou King, who was not on the show. But Andrew goes through Safely. Safely is really looking at trying to make sure that the experience of both renters and people that are renting their property have great experiences, that they get great renters. And we're really going to look at how this is building upon things like VRBO and Airbnb and other services that are making it easier for you to find renters. They're trying to make it simpler to make sure that those experiences are well insured, or that we avoid bad renters and bad people that are potentially providing the property. So let's get to know Safely. All right, and we are back. We are back here at MetLife here in Raleigh, North Carolina. We're doing some very cool interviews with people around the Techstars program. Techstars partnered with MetLife, really focusing on companies that are trying to change the health industry, the insurance industry, and we get a chance to work, get the chance to talk today with some very interesting founders and companies. So today, right now, we're going to talk to Andrew Bate, co-founder or founding member of Safely, and very excited to have you here. Tell us a little about your background. You were around the travel industry through your previous job in McKinsey and things like that. But what's driving you to want to start this company and be passionate around it?
Yeah, well, thank you. And we founded Safely to help a homeowner feel comfortable with who's staying in their house and what happens when something goes wrong.
Yeah.
Because, this house is a fantastic asset. You can make plenty of money from it. You can't stay in your vacation home all the time, but you have to be comfortable with that internet stranger who's coming into your house. So, I think two things really helped us understand that there was a need. Right. First one is, like you said, when I worked in the travel industry, I worked at McKinsey in Atlanta and worked only with travel clients. Mm-hmm. And every travel company just hates underutilized assets, whether it's a hotel room, whether it's a Boeing 747 that's just sitting on the runway, or people aren't paying as much as they should be to be sitting in a seat. You know, every management decision is about how do you use an asset better.
Right.
And at the same time, I had friends who would, you know, leave their home empty for 48 weeks of the year. And they're sophisticated people. It's hard enough to get a first home in society. To get a second home means you've done a few things right.
Right.
And here they are making what was to me the stupidest decision ever, to leave it empty.
Right.
And so we started to study and ask hundreds and hundreds of homeowners, like, why are you leaving that home empty? And it's truly because, you know, there's the hassle of renting, which is real. And then the other, and the one that came through as being a little bit irrational, is, well, they didn't want strangers in their house.
Right.
Even though they stay in hotels all the time, they share the living space with strangers all the time, their perception of what happens, it doesn't at all mirror what happens in reality.
Right.
And so we want to try to solve that, help at least some of them feel better about a guest in their house.
Yeah. It's interesting because it really is. It's all trust. It was funny. I was in an event a few weeks ago, and somebody was kind of talking about trust in the internet, and they threw this slide up, and it said, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, we basically told people, like, never talk to any strangers on the internet and never put your credit card on there. And now we literally summon strangers to come pick us up in their car, and we give them our credit card, and they take us random places.
Right.
And so it just, so much has changed in terms of, you know, we've made it simpler to use those things. We've figured out some sort of way to trust people or rate people. And explain to us how you guys are going about doing that in sort of the rental in the business. Like, how do I figure out who's a good guy and a bad guy?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we do a couple of things. You know, we have to answer a homeowner's question of who's staying in my house, mm-hmm. and what happens when something goes wrong. And we help them know who's staying by – we do a background check on the guest. We verify their identity. We check for felonies. We check sex offender lists. We check global sanctions lists, like terrorist watch list.
Yeah.
But most importantly, we have the industry's only contributory database of bad guests. So if you've rented a home in our network or beyond, and we know about it, and you've trashed that home, you know, you're going to have some special rental conditions next time. These are people who shouldn't rent without the right supervision.
Right.
And then the next thing we do is we insure the rental for up to $1 million of primary commercial insurance. Mm-hmm. It covers the guest, the homeowner, and the property manager. And so pretty much if anything goes wrong, you know, we have an underwriter and we make everything whole again.
Right, right. It was interesting. You and I were talking ahead of time. I know, you know, obviously everybody's heard of like Airbnb. Some people have heard of things like VRBO and other rental sites. You know, you were telling me nowadays that, you know, you can go on Expedia and right next to a hotel, you might see somebody in a city's home. Like, talk about just the change in how property distribution and visibility has changed over the last few years.
Oh, sure. It's completely different. It used to be you have a second home and you put it up on bulletin boards with your Chamber of Commerce and you tell them about it, and then people will call the Chamber of Commerce, and then that home will be booked. And then there are catalogs. You could look through catalogs, like real paper catalogs.
Yeah.
Then VRBO came along and they put the catalog on the internet. And then, wow, fast forward, you know, a decade or so, Expedia acquired VRBO or HomeAway. So now that's part of their empire. Mm-hmm. Airbnb started and just created so much awareness for travelers that staying in a vacation home is or in a home instead of a hotel is something that's normal people do and is okay and actually sometimes a much better experience.
Right. So if I have friends, for example, let's just kind of walk through the thinking of because everything that we're finding, especially with these, is there's a big change in kind of the supply chain between somebody offering a service or a property and then finding customers. And then there's a bunch of things in between that people might have to deal with. Are you engaged with the renters? Are you engaged with the VRBOs? Like, how does Safely play into that thing so that people go, I get the insurance and it wasn't that hard to figure out?
Yeah. you're kind of describing what's the vacation rental stack.
Yeah.
And where do we fit on that stack?
Sort of. Yeah, exactly.
Indeed. So we don't have any supply. We don't have any homes.
Right.
We don't clean the toilets or anything like that. We partner, we've focused right so far on professional property managers.
Okay.
It's about 40% of the industry. People have a home, give it to a property manager to manage.
Sure.
And what's great is they have 80 or 100 homes under management, but they all use a back office property management system.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've integrated our services into that property management system.
Yeah.
And so what happens is when a reservation's confirmed, we get information about the guest as well, and it all happens automatically. We can run a background check. Then we figure out how risky that rental is. So we have an algorithm that predicts the outcome of the stay and tells us how much damage is going to take place. And then we can instantly underwrite it at the same time. So all this happens through a connection with the back office property management system.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you think about that. The world has gone from, your business was a building, it was a brick and mortar, then it was a website, then it was an app on your phone, and now it's essentially an API.
Yeah.
You guys are an API driven business.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we spend all of our developers' time, all of our time making those services available via API better. Our website's kind of ugly.
Yeah.
We're changing it, but all of our effort goes into the API services.
Right. You talked about having access to all these different databases, criminal databases and all these sort of, is that something that is sort of readily available? Do you have to be an insider to know how to get that? I mean, people think about those as like very tightly guarded secrets because they involve what's the process for getting access to those types of things?
Yeah. And the first thing you need is what's called permissible use. Mm-hmm. So there has to be a reason. You can't just be checking ex-boyfriends, ex-girlfriends, things like that.
Yeah.
So you need permissible use, which, when you're letting a stranger into your house, that's in the United States, that's considered permissible use.
Gotcha.
So that means we can then subscribe to databases that include criminal records, that include demographic information.
You've been given authority by essentially the renter to do these types of things.
Yeah, the guest does give approval for us to run these background checks.
Yeah.
And the homeowner makes it a prerequisite of renting. Just like the hotel requires you to show your driver's license when you check in.
Yep, makes sense.
And from there, we check these databases, but then what's really interesting is because we also insure the rental, we see the outcome of every single stay.
Mm-hmm.
So we're able to figure out what types of rentals, what types of, how much advanced booking are people making, what booking site are they on, what's their length of stay, what type of payment did they use, things like that. We're able to start to figure out the profile of those risky guests.
Yeah. And are you seeing certain trends? So obviously, I travel for work all the time, and I'm in a city for 2 days and I'm out, and just going to a Hilton is sort of convenient. But are you seeing big changes in maybe longer term travelers in terms of them now not using sort of commercial properties, but using this because it feels more like home? Yeah. Are you seeing those trends yet?
Yeah, a couple trends. First is the rise of the urban home rental.
Okay.
So it used to be if you're going to rent a home, it's going to be in a vacation destination.
Sure.
It's going to be near a lake. It's going to be near an ocean or in the mountains or something like that. Now, the fastest growing segment is the urban rentals. So you're in Atlanta, you're in Raleigh, you're in New York. And, that causes more problems because you have neighbors nearby.
Sure.
But that's the fastest growing segment. And so all of a sudden, you have two kind of sub-trends. One is that millennials are starting to go to work and travel for business, and they're more used to staying in an Airbnb or a non-hotel.
Yeah.
And so when they say, I'm going to stay somewhere, they say, I'm staying in an Airbnb rather than I'm staying in a house, I'm staying in a hotel.
Yeah.
And so that's just their mindset as they're traveling. And then also for everyone, especially a longer-term stay, if you're in town for a consulting project, well, it's pretty nice to have your own kitchen and to have a little bit more space and that home rental or condo rental
sense.
Works really well for that.
Yeah, it makes sense. Obviously, we're here in Techstars. When you're anywhere you're in these types of environments, it's just tons of ideas and a lot of brainstorming. And I can imagine there's a certain aspect of you're collecting a bunch of data which gives you trends. So we just talked about trends. And then there's got to be a part at some point, if you're having a beer, you're talking to somebody, where you start going if I know these trends about where they're staying, there's probably the opportunity to say they have to eat where they have to, like, you know, how do we build an API that's going to tie into Grubhub that will become another, like, how much do you have to stay really focused on this business, and then how much do you start sort of wandering off and the, you know, the whiteboards become bigger and bigger?
Wandering is bad. I mean, unless it's the brilliant pivot that you have to make, but otherwise we need focus. We don't need more ideas. We just need to keep doing what we're doing,
right?
But stay aware of the environment to make sure we're still doing the right thing.
Right. Your background, you know, we were talking earlier, you've done some entrepreneurial things as well. Mm-hmm. How does this compare to having done it yourself before in terms of, you know, the acceleration or the support system around it? Is it, you know, is it better? Is it harder? Is it just the time crunch different? Like, what, how are the two comparisons?
Yeah. You know, this one, I mean, so the last year we've been growing really quickly.
Yeah.
And that part I hadn't gotten to yet.
Right.
So it's new problems. They're far more fun problems. Mm-hmm. You know, it turns out if our technology breaks, people call us and they're mad.
Yeah.
Whereas before it would break all the time and no one called. They didn't care. So you know, it's we're spending the same amount of time, we're working just as hard, but it is a lot nicer to do this for customers and be solving a real problem rather than being stuck at the wireframe stage or the PowerPoint stage and trying to get that initial traction.
Right. You guys are in Atlanta. Atlanta, obviously, you know, world-class city, but maybe not necessarily thought of like, you know, Silicon Valley in terms of, you know, tech, you know, tons of enterprise companies and so forth. Some of what you guys do is AI and ML and trying to sort through these things. How hard is it to find that kind of talent? Obviously, like Georgia Tech is nearby, but to a city like Atlanta versus competing against the Valley.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I really imagine the Raleigh-Durham area is similar. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a lot of competition. Some people want to work for a startup, and there are a handful. And so you can get some really great talent for normal wages, and even paying normal wages, they can have a yard and like,
they can have a life.
I don't know, things that... that middle-class families want to have, and they can do that, whereas you can pay them upper-class type of money in San Jose or Palo Alto, and they're not getting any sort of yard.
Right.
And so it's good. You know, the corporations train people really well, so there's managerial talent, both tech and non-tech.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the employees are – they stay longer.
Yeah.
You know, they're not jumping from Facebook then to Google then over to Apple to the next hot startup.
Right. It's part of their life. Yeah. It's not just their resume. Yeah. And
so, I mean, I think it's really hard to get like escape velocity, get that initial traction in a smaller city. But once you're there, it's a great place to scale.
Yeah, yeah. And Atlanta's a great city.
It's a
great city. And you got the sports and the restaurants and everything else.
You got it.
And things that people love. Well, very, very cool. You know, last thing, what's the general pitch that you're making to, you know, like you said, you're going after 40% of sort of property managers, but like, what's the pitch to get the next bunch of them? What's the thing that they go, you guys make sense for us?
Yeah, there are two things. One is, you know, these property managers, their customer is an individual homeowner who's reluctant about, you know, about renting for the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, they see their neighbors making a ton of money and they're like, I really should, but it's kind of weird. And so these property managers can recruit these new homeowners a lot more easily when they say, well, every guest goes through this type of due diligence powered by Safely and then comes with $1 million behind them in primary insurance. That gets some of them, not everyone, but that gets some of them over the challenges of starting to rent. And then the other thing that really resonates is, you know, when there is a bad stay, and it happens a couple percent of the time, when there's a bad stay, we at least can make that bad situation neutral.
Yeah,
not great. It's still bad. Someone trashed your house, but still,
you
got it. But there's still, we pay for it. The property manager doesn't have to try to charge the homeowner for that damage. Going after the guest is hard. You'll usually lose a credit card chargeback. They'll write a bad review. So it's just kind of nice to have someone in the middle to operationally smooth everything out.
Right. Right. Well, and I got to imagine at the end of the day, the property manager's biggest challenge is, you know, he doesn't want turnover. He just wants people to keep coming back, And anything you can do to ease that process is helpful.
Well,
very, very cool. Well, Andrew, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Best of luck to everybody. Best of luck to you guys growing the business. You're not starting from scratch. You're growing the business. But great to see another company here in the Southeast doing well. And we will talk to you soon. Best of luck.
Love it. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, folks, with that, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you very much to Andrew Bate from Safely for our last interview of the day. You know, once again, folks, we hope you've enjoyed both of these shows, both part one and part two, gotten to know all six companies, Buddy, Enroll Hero, FitBliss, Fix Health, Portable, and Safely. Really looking at a lot of different aspects of the insurance industry. They are six of the 10 companies that are part of that MetLife Digital Accelerator Program sponsored by Techstars that's been going on here in Cary, North Carolina. And actually, by the time you listen to this show, they'll be one day away from really having their big demo day, their big reveal to the VC community, looking for new rounds of funding, looking for new partnerships. And so we hope you enjoyed the show. We hope you really got some insight into the founders, into their companies, into the process. I know a lot of people are very interested in startups and what it takes to get there. I will tell you from speaking to all these folks, just a lot of really good people, super passionate about what they're trying to do, super passionate about the process. And the Techstars folks and the MetLife folks could not have been nicer to us about granting us access to the program and granting us access to what was going on. So hope you really enjoyed these two shows, gave you some insight into how the process works. And as always, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more podcasts, show notes, and everything social media. And visit acloud.guru for all your cloud training needs.